Hey, everybody. Thanks for listening to the Delta Flyers. We are so glad that you're here. Now, if you want to listen to this podcast ad-free, you can do that for as little as $3 a month.
Yep, $3 a month. If you go to patreon.com/thedeltaflyers and become a patron at the $3 tier, you have zero ads and you have 40 minutes, 50 minutes, sometimes over an hour of bonus material. It's absolutely amazing. So that's one way to go ad-free.
Welcome to the Delta Flyers as we journey through the wormhole. Your hosts along this journey are my fellow esteemed Star Trek actors, Terry Farrell, Robbie McNeil, and myself, Garrett Wong. To receive the complete version of this podcast, please check out patreon.com/thedeltaflyers and sign up to become a patron for the amazing, amazing bonus material that you will get if you're a patron. Hello, Robbie. Hello, Terry.
Hello there.
Hey.
Hello, Gawa.
I feel like we're all a little mellow. We just spent the weekend together in Philadelphia. My ass is kicked, I gotta say.
I'm still tired too. We were just talking about it.
Terry flew back Monday. Robbie and I flew back Sunday. And I said to Terry, all day Monday was me trying to stay awake. I'll be honest, I took 14 naps throughout Monday. I kept sleeping, waking up, sleeping, waking up. And I said to Terry, Robbie, I said, I feel like because we are all now over 50, travel is absolutely exhausting when we go across the country for all of us now. Am I right? It's no longer the adventure that it was when we were in our 20s.
It was definitely not an adventure for me. My flight was 4 hours delayed and the the Delta Club was closed and every restaurant was closed. So I didn't get home till 3 a.m. or something. 3 a.m. Mountain time, so 5 a.m. Philly time. It was like I was beat up. So good to see you guys. I don't do a lot of conventions.
Did you get the long wait going through security?
Yes, and I saw Cam Newton. He was right behind me.
Yeah.
Cam Newton, the NFL quarterback who wears the crazy hats.
Oh, yeah. We know Cam Newton very well.
Yeah,
Megan and I do. Yeah.
He was right behind me.
Yeah, he's the one when he's in the huddle, he would say, ready. He would do this little, you know,
he's
this,
a character.
Yeah, he's a character and he's a very tall quarterback.
Very big guy.
Big man. Did you talk to him?
No, he wasn't that close. I did get a picture of him in his hat.
Okay.
He had on a giant hat with feathers and all kinds of things.
Did you one of those fan things where you snuck the picture?
I did. I snuck it.
Can you please text me the photo?
It's a little shameful.
I'd like to have that. I want to show Megan. The reason why the line was so long, Terry, at least for me, maybe also for Robbie, was that the girls' volleyball tournament was over. The one that...
Yes. Thank
we
God.
Saw all those young
They kept
athletes.
Me up too at night. I had to go out and go like, excuse me, girls, can you keep it down? They're like, we're so sorry.
Yeah.
And I'm
because
like,
because they're in the hallway.
Totally get it, but
they're in the hallway.
They were right
gap.
Next door to me.
Oh, of course. God. And they're trying to get away from their parents. So, you know, they're right at your door. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Did you come out and say, I was also 15 at one point?
No.
No,
at
just
15,
be quiet.
I was 40. No,
just be
I
quiet.
Said it nice because I know, you know, they can't help
you're
it.
Nice.
I wasn't angry. Thank you.
So no one gave you attitude then, right?
No, they would never.
They would
you never know.
She's too
no.
kind.
But I want to say about the sleep thing, no matter what age, that at the time different, my circadian rhythms get so messed up with a time difference, even though it's little. And for me, the lighting in the convention center
was horrible.
If I don't get some natural light, it was super dim. And now they don't light hotel rooms. You have no light in your hotel rooms. Your bathrooms are dim, right?
Yeah, there's no overhead lighting in the hotel room.
I can't
it's like
wake
a lamp.
Up.
It's a lamp in the corner or a lamp on your on the end table, and that's it. Nothing.
I had to use a flashlight. I didn't even have a light. I use candles.
No
for
clock
light.
In my
no clock. No, no,
no.
No
clock.
No.
It was super weird. I mean, otherwise the hotel, I mean, they were nice people.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
could never find one from the hotel.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
I do want to welcome Chris Bennett, who signed up as a patron at the lieutenant level. And I want to say, when Chris signed up, they said that they signed up to lieutenant level so that they could be a higher rank than Harry Kim. And I just thought that was important to share. So welcome, Chris, as a lieutenant, not an ensign, to the Delta Flyers.
Is Al a good response from me?
Yeah.
Al, or double
I think it's
ouch.
Hilarious.
We have a couple birthdays to celebrate. Marie Burgoyne is celebrating a birthday on June 1st. So happy birthday, Marie.
Happy birthday, Marie.
Happy birthday, Marie. And we have another birthday to celebrate. Ian Ramsey, June 1st. Happy birthday, Ian.
Happy birthday, Ian.
My man, Ian. Happy B-Day, my friend.
We also have another new profit level patron, Nickers, a.k.a. Nikki T. Welcome to the profits of the wormhole.
I was just thinking of Nikki T the other day. I was like, what's going on with Nikki T? Well, clearly she just graduated. Well, she went, she upgraded.
She has become a god.
She's a prophet now.
At this point.
She's a god. Yes. She's a Bajoran god now. Yes. Okay. Good to know.
For Cardassians, I have a beautiful limerick. Here we go. Go something like this. Bashir and Garrick make a pretty good team. Things aren't always as clear as they seem. A kid caught in the middle leads to a custody riddle. Family matters are messy, I think, is the theme.
I like it.
Wow, yeah. I do too.
Thank you.
Yeah. I wrote one.
Oh, I love the poetry.
I know.
Terry's poetry.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are very lucky because
Don't
Terry is about
stop
to bestow
talking
us.
It up. Okay, wait. Do all comedians say, don't brag about how funny I am?
True. Yeah, that's true. Okay.
Yeah. Because if it's not good, then it's...
Now
great.
The pressure's on, Terry.
Ladies
right?
and gentlemen,
now
expect
pressure's
nothing.
On.
Expect nothing from this. I'm going to start that from the base
right.
level.
Oh, thank you, guys. You're so supportive.
Go ahead.
The tides of war live on in Terek Nor. 8 years passed, reliving deep scars to last. Hatred and racism at its core. A poor boy suffers even more.
Very good.
Yours are always so deep and meaningful.
Yeah, I like it.
I apologize.
I love it.
All right, my haiku for Cardassians. Grugal bites Garrick. Garrick and Bashir find truth. Padar gets son back.
Wow, that's deep and meaningful too.
Do you know what the haiku basically is?
No, but you sounded like, you know what you sounded like?
Shatner.
Captain Kirk.
That's what I was saying. You want to talk guest stars?
Let's talk guest stars.
All right. A lot. Rosalind Chow as Keiko. Andrew Robinson as Garrick. Also, Robert Mandan is, I'm not sure if I'm pronounced that right. Mandan? Is that good?
Yeah.
Robert Mandan as Khotan Padar. Terrence Evans as Proka, the Bajoran father. Sharon Connolly as Jomat Lusan, who is the Bajoran who recorded Rugal's original adoption files, which disappeared, of course. And also, we have Karen Hensel as Dietla, who is the Bajoran in charge of the Tozat resettlement center that we go to in the very beginning part of the episode. And
she had very good enunciation, by the way.
Thank you.
Yes. You. She did.
She had. Okay.
I mean, you did
too. Dietla had.
But she did. She had very good enunciation. Very
Karen, Miss Hensel, as Dila. Okay.
As that was Dila was the Bajoran resettlement person, right?
Yeah, the very first person that they go down to talk to, whose computer wasn't working. That one. Is that
she
who you say
very
has good,
good
pronunciation?
Diction. Yes.
Okay, good. It was very excellent. Yes. We also have Jillian Zeismer as Asha. And I had to piece this together because I was like, who could this be? That's the little orphan girl, the Cardassian girl, saying, hello, sir. Do you happen to spare a tuppence? No, she goes, could you? Yeah. Well, are you taking
Please take me home with you.
Please take me home with you. And may I have some porridge?
Porridge.
So, yes. That was Gillian Zeismer.
She was awfully cute.
She was super cute. You're referencing the musical Oliver there.
Yes, I was.
I'm very impressed that you're pulling from a musical, the Broadway musical scene. I just want to point that out.
He's broadening his horizons. This is what's happening.
I did more for Robbie because he's such a massive Broadway fan.
I'm a big Broadway nerd.
Yeah,
you didn't use a sports reference. No. You used a Broadway musical reference, and I just want to point that out.
It's a first. I usually go sports ball, but today I went
Broadway.
Yeah.
Hold it there for a second, Gillian Zeismer. Was she in any other Trek? Did you look that up?
No, I did look her up.
Because she looked, the little kid looked so familiar to me. I was like, was she on Voyager? I don't know.
She does. She definitely looks familiar. She only has one other credit. It was an independent film called Homeboy or something like that in 1992. And then she did this episode in 1993, and that's it. She never acted again.
And then she
became
a doctor or something. Smart. And
do you know that for
no?
Did you look her up?
No, is that true?
Is that true?
She's a doctor of she's psychiatry or psych, whatever. She is a MFCC, and she specializes in counseling LGBTQ.
Good for her.
If that is her, and it does look like the same facial shape, and in Beverly Hills, so that would make sense.
That would make sense
because every entry is her as this, you know, licensed psychiatrist or
I knew that she chose a very stable and productive path. I knew it. I could tell from her one line.
Wow,
that she had something more to offer.
She had a lot of grace. She held herself. Yeah.
You're like a Scotch-Irish fortune teller, Robbie. Yeah. Unbelievable. Okay.
I do readings, by the way, for all the listeners. I will do your reading. Contact me at Robbie Duncan McNeil Readings.
At RobbieKnowsYourFuture.com.
I know your phone number. I will call you for that.
We have more people. We're not even done. Gosh. No. Vidal Peterson. I think the actor that played Rugal did quite a good job in this episode.
Yeah, what's his name again? Vidal?
Vidal, as in Vidal Sassoon. Vidal Peterson. Vidal
Great
Peterson.
Name.
Yeah.
Great
name. Really good name. We also have Dion Anderson as Zolon. Zolon. Do you guys know who Zolon is?
The guy with the suit, the gambler guy.
The traitor guy.
I can't wait to talk about him.
Accused. Yeah, we can talk about him. They falsely accuse the Bajoran father as being an abusive parent. That's Zolon. And then we have Mark Alaimo, of course, as Gul Dukat. And that is our play.
That's a lot.
Teleplay by James Crocker. Story by Gene Wolland and John Wright. And directed by Cliff Bohl.
The teddy bear!
Bohl. Terry, did you join us? What was the last episode you reviewed with us?
It was Invasive Procedures.
Guess what we all missed
on
that episode?
What?
When Varad comes back into Ops and he is the new Varad, the confident Varad. He has that interplay, that scene with Sisko about, do you remember where we first met? Oh, do you guys remember that?
Oh, yeah. And they're laughing. Yeah. You're like, oh, yes, I remember
100%.
That.
Yes, you do remember that then. Okay. So I'm just going to read a little bit of that excerpt of that. Remember when we first met? Sisko says, Varad says, Pelios Station. Sisko says, Anastasia. Varad says, and that trip we took to the Cliffs of Bohl. No one caught that.
Nobody caught it.
I can't believe we did not. I love it when the writers do it.
Oh, I love that. But I forgot to mention it when we were reviewing it. So I just, you know, since Cliff is directing this one,
so great.
I wanted to bring that up too for your amusement, for both of your amusements.
Can I just say a little ditty too? I mean, I don't have one in front of me. My plaques are still packed, but stuff on the station. You guys know this when I say it. There are names of behind the scenes people.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
All over the station and in the grid work. And there's a few episodes in the future, no pun intended, where there's posters and other behind the scenes people are in that. I just love how they included everybody as much as possible. It just makes you feel so special. And it makes you proud to be a part of a team of people that includes everyone.
Yeah. For sure. They're having fun with it when they add those little Easter eggs for the fans to catch or for the actors to catch, basically.
Or for the writers.
The writers,
the crew. It's the crew people that don't get acknowledged a lot. So when they get to shine a little in a way you don't expect on screen, you know, makes them feel, you know, celebrating part of it.
Yeah.
Agreed.
And also, like, when the crew is there on the stage, on the sets for 15, 18 hours a day, and they get to look over to the side on some console and see their friend's initials or their name, it just keeps them feeling invested in the show.
Yeah. Build spirit and community. Yeah.
Great. Well, let's dive into the plot of this episode. What happens? We're in the Replimat. Bashir finds Garrick drinking some kind of stinky juice, I guess. He talks about, he does reference the smell of the stinky juice.
Rocasa juice.
Rocasa juice, yeah. Bashir's very, very suspicious that Garrick's only working as a cover to spy on Bajorans or something. He fishes, but Garrick denies it. And then this Cardassian boy comes in from the airlock with a Bajoran man with him and another fancy suited alien. And I look at that coat, I literally rewound it and froze frame it because it looks like either iPhones on the suit, all those square things that are like attached.
Or maybe
mouse traps.
Yeah, that was in my, Robbie, that was in my video reaction. I said, those are mouse traps on his suit.
They look like mouse traps, don't they?
They do.
That very suit, funny. I just had to look at it like two or three times. I was like, oh my God, Bob Blackman, what a suit. But anyway, he escorts them in, goes to get him a drink. And then Garrick goes to speak to this boy, the Cardassian boy with the Bajoran man's odd combo. And the boy bites Garrick's hand.
Yes.
And then runs and hugs the Bajoran man.
Yes.
So you're sort of left with this very confusing, very confusing scene.
Can I just say, I felt like it was a teensy creepy that Garrick, first of all, touched him. Secondly, said what a handsome boy he was. It was.
Yeah, it was.
Felt like there was this implied was sort of like.
It was lecherous to me.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, biting him was, I think, excessive. But at the same time, I would, if it was my son, I'd be like, I'd rather have, you know, do something inappropriate and get away from a creepy guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
For me, I don't know if you guys felt this, but Robbie, when we all first see Proka and everyone walking in, they're not in the Replimat yet. They're not seated and you see them. When the first time you see Rugal, it is sort of from a side angle, basically. You see the longer hair, the shorter stature, and the clothing, I'll be honest, it looked like a shawl for a grandma. So to me, Rugal looked like a little old grandma, because also with the Bajoran earring, I just thought it was an earring.
A girl.
Yeah, I did. Wow. I thought it was a young girl, but not a young girl, but an old lady, basically.
Oh, how funny.
Because the wardrobe looked like it looked very shawl-like.
A little rag and muffin.
Yeah.
They could have picked anything other than that.
You know why they picked that clothing? Because of Oliver Twist, the musical. It looked like the street urchins from... This is all coming back to Oliver, the musical, and I just want to keep that on theme. That's why they picked the clothes.
Okay. Hey, thank you for validating that for me now. I'm good.
I do want to say two more things about the scene. One, and I'm going to bring it up a few times. Cliff Ball did a thing in this episode quite a few times directorially.
Okay.
Where, you know, let's say the scene is about Garrick and Bashir, as it was, talking about whether he's a spy or whatever. They start on something. Cliff started the shot on some extras, and then Bashir sort of entered by a replicator. And then Bashir had some blocking that brought him through the Replimat and then revealed Garrick. And then Bashir joined him, and that took us into the scene. So this idea of like starting off the scene a little bit with the camera, letting the story and the context sort of develop and land into your master, your two shot or whatever.
Yeah.
He did that quite a few times. And I think that's a really effective way of getting movement and establishing the environment and things like that. And I think Cliff did a great job. So this first scene immediately, I was like, oh, I didn't even know who directed it. I hadn't looked that up yet.
Yeah.
Credits hadn't come up. So I was like, oh, this is intelligently, we're starting off in a good way. It's not just like cut to a master of,
which
the
can be really abrupt.
Yeah, abrupt and kind of.
Yeah, I think what's nice about the shots easing in, it sets the tone before the scene starts.
Yes.
So it's reminding us that the environment is also a character.
Yep.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. It gives you much better context of what's going on when you start elsewhere and bring it in. And then that style is stuff that we see. Rick Colby will do that. Also,
David Livingston
would do Livingston will do that kind of stuff. Who's our Canadian director?
Alan Craker. Yeah, Craker.
But Craker's is even more complex, you know, even
Craker will keep it moving. Yes.
It keeps going. But again, this choice of how to direct that scene or how to move from one point to another, it gets you, it's a better choice than being static.
Yeah. And that's all the director, by the way, that's never in the script, just for people listening. Right. They don't describe how the shots are going to be in a script.
Right.
It's just the story's described. The director has to come up with all that blocking and the way the shots kind of play out. Mm-hmm. Did you notice, by the way, behind Bashir, when he's sitting there talking, there were two aliens with these giant pillbox. It actually looked like pizza boxes or something on their head.
Yes. So do you think, Robbie, think that Bob Blackman was sitting there in the wardrobe department trying to think of some other wardrobe elements to put on background aliens? And they had they were eating pizza there.
Yeah, had pizza for lunch. And he's like, that's perfect.
That's it, the box. We don't have time for anything else. Make some pizza boxes and put them on their heads. That's what it was.
I think he had leftover Christmas packaging.
Yes, it could have been
maybe that was it.
Could have been Christmas time.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect Christmas gift.
And the alien with the pizza box or the Christmas gift on
box
their
hat.
Head.
Yeah,
box head. They also had sleeves that came down to their fingertips, and I noticed they had no hands. They were kind of like holding their. And I thought, they just saved money on hand makeup.
Completely.
They just put the costume down to the end.
They covered
it
all.
We're getting down to it if we're saving money on hand makeup.
They did, though, for sure. Yeah. I did notice that.
But there was more money for the fabric, extra fabric for the sleeves to be long.
That's true. Fabric costs money, too.
And what about the hats?
Yes. And I don't think we saved
any money on this one, Robbie.
I don't think so either. At the end of the scene, yes, Garrick's hand gets bit and Bashir checks Garrick's wound. And then we go to ops from here. And Bashir's running in, fills in the team about the Bajoran boy and his father. And Kira does mention in the scene that the Cardassians left behind a lot of orphans when they evacuated. And that the Bajorans had no choice but to take care of these children that were left behind, these refugee children. I noticed in this scene, by the way, that Kira was talking about this Cardassian Bajoran issue, but then, not to jump ahead of ourselves, but she basically doesn't do anything the rest of the episode. Like, Kira's not.
Oh, you're right.
Any more scenes. And I thought, because in the scene, you had a three shot of Sisko and Dax and Miles, I think. And then you had a single of Bashir and a single of Kira. So I thought, this is going to be a Kira story because it's Cardassians and Bajorans. And she really had nothing to do in the rest of the episode.
Not at all.
Which kind of surprised me.
Well, why would she want to save Cardassian children?
But she would have feelings about it, don't you think?
If she did, they'd be too big to deal with what we're already... Right, because it's not her story.
Yeah.
It's like the last one, Invasive Procedures, you were talking about it should have been my story, but
absolutely.
Garrett made a really good point. It was probably Sisko's story.
That's how they seem to write it.
But it really was John Glover's story. His story. He came to steal the symbiote, and that's whose story it was, our guest star's story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Robbie has a point, because you would think that Kira, being Bajoran, would get a little bit more out of the interrogations of these Bajoran officials and people in charge of the orphanages. When they went down to the planet, you think that maybe they would be more forthcoming speaking to her as opposed to Garrick the Cardassian and Bashir the human. But because we've already seen that combination together in a very early episode, season one, I think the writers were like, we like this combo. We're going to keep it going. And that's what happened.
Oh, it was a great episode for Garrick and Bashir.
Happy to see Andrew Robinson back, by the way.
The other thing, when you mentioned like the last episode and like whose story is this episode? Like, was it a Sisko episode? Was it a John Glover episode? Was it a Dax episode? One thing I do when I'm producing shows and working with directors, I always ask the director, I said, let's make sure that we remember whose point of view this story is. Mm-hmm. Because as you're directing, you want the audience to experience the point of view of the character that this story is really focused on. Mm-hmm. And so think about point of view and as you're prepping your episode, as you're blocking it, as you're planning your shots. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that the point of view is always like in that last episode. I don't think the point of view was clear in the writing. And I don't know the director knew what the point of view was. Like it was kind of confusing as to whose point of view. But
right.
Yeah.
Okay.
The other thing in the scene I noticed was Bashir says, Garrick was bitten on the hand. And Dax goes, oh, another unsatisfied customer. And I wrote a note, does Dax hate his clothes? I never knew Dax had opinions about Garrick's work.
No.
Guess she does.
Not about Garrick's clothes. Did whoever bite him not like the clothes that were made?
Yeah. But that Dax is aware that, or that people, I don't know.
But why would I hate the clothes?
That's how I heard it. Like, another unsatisfied, as if Dax is also an unsatisfied customer or something like that. That's how I heard it.
Oh, no.
But maybe, yeah.
I don't think she'd let him make her anything.
Then he always cuts the pants too long from O'Brien. So now I'm thinking, I thought Garrick was a master tailor.
I know. And it seems like everybody's
this looks like his Yelp review. He's like got a 3.2 out of 5 exactly. stars. I'm like, what?
This also,
or 2.6.
Right. And then this also feeds into, but he's really a spy.
Yes,
exactly. he's a horrible tailor, I guess.
Maybe.
But Sisko gets a call from Gul Dukat, I think, and has to head into his office. So he goes in there. Mm-hmm. And another great Cliff Bull shot. So the camera starts on Sisko walking in, pans over to the monitor, and Sisko like sits on the back of a chair or something. And we go right into the conversation, the video call. And usually when someone comes like Janeway on our show, or usually Sisko, he goes and sits at his desk and looks at his laptop or something. And it's just a pretty straightforward Zoom call or whatever, phone call.
Right.
But this was nice because it was on a side monitor and Sisko's sitting, on the back of a chair. It was a great angle on Sisko because you got to see more of the set behind him. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just like the window or a wall behind his head. So I like that little just transition into the phone call. I thought was a little detail I liked.
Good job, Cliff Bull.
Good job.
Yeah. I love Avery in this episode.
I do too.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I like his tone. He feels calmly powerful.
Yeah.
He's very balanced. He's very balanced in this episode, his energy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I like it very much.
Agreed.
But basically, Dukat calls to say he wants to find more out about this boy, that all these Cardassian orphans that were left on Bajor are a shame, for the Cardassians, that this is a real source of shame for them. And he wants to convince his people, the Cardassians, to bring all these poor orphans home.
And he makes the accusation. He goes, obviously, these children are being raised to hate their own kind, right? So there's a lot of that going on. Mm-hmm.
It does feel like Sisko and Dukat, in the episodes I've seen them talk, like they're pretty friendly with each other. And I don't know is this going to be a relationship where they become partners down the road or friends? I don't know. I mean, Dukat's definitely, and I look at Terry smiling. Clearly not.
I would never say friends.
They become lovers is what she's going to tell us.
I think that Sisko's a very smart diplomat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's very good with Dukat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think Dukat, for all his unsavory qualities, is also a very good diplomat.
Yeah.
In that, for the most part, he knows what he wants and he's not going to shoot himself in the foot over. Yeah.
I was all in on the friendliness of both of them in this scene. I mean, later on, obviously, Dukat gets busted for his his scheme. But at this point, I'm
cordial,
like, oh, Dukat.
Not friendly. Yes. But I don't trust Dukat in this scene either. Just him. So suddenly he's altruistic about these kids from how long ago?
It just doesn't make sense.
Come on, man. Why aren't they already home if you care so much about it? Just go get them.
I was
They're in an orphanage. What the
honestly,
hell?
Honestly, I was
all.
I was like, Dukat has a heart. And Sisko, they
Robbie,
can
that's
save.
So you.
I know. I was really... I did. I was all in. That's why I wanted them to be friends, but clearly they're not going to be friends. Well, we go to the guest quarters next. Again, Cliff Bull has an opening shot that has this movement that brings us into the scene. So I love it. Proka, the Bajoran father, is very angry at the Cardassians. You know, they abandoned these poor children. He seems very protective of his Cardassian son. Yeah, so Sisko doesn't understand why Rugal was so terrified of Garak, you know, just because he was a Cardassian. Doesn't make sense. And the father, Proka, explains he raised him like a Bajoran, told him what the Cardassians did. That's why. And Rugal doesn't think he's one of them anymore.
Because Proka is a racist.
Yes. Yeah.
It's not just the people who attacked him, the Cardassians that attacked him. It's all Cardassians.
Proka is racist against Cardassians.
It really made me mad.
I know.
Though, because Miles deals with that in this episode.
O'Brien is also racist towards Cardassians. So yeah. Proka and O'Brien are the same person in a way. They're both racist.
They see things the same way.
Yes, they do.
But the dad does seem to, he's really wound up in the scene. He's very angry, very passionate, but at the end he kind of softens. I love that Cliff had him sort of sit on the chair at the end of the scene and he reveals he loves this boy. He really cares for him. Yeah. It seems very sincere.
Mm-hmm.
We go to Quark's next. We're over the Dabo table, which I don't know if we've ever seen that shot before, like right over the table and then sort of pulling back. Have we seen it?
Well, Robbie, we've seen it from the mezzanine, from
way
second
up high.
Level, but not from where it's on the same level directly above. No, we have not.
Right. Yeah. So you see more detail this time than you're used to seeing.
Yeah.
Maybe
they just didn't
have the cards finished.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Maybe they had to go further back.
The top part of that Dabo wheel, it looks like a ceiling fan to me. It's what it looked like. I'm like, oh, okay. Anyway.
Yeah, but that overhead shot I thought was very cool because it starts overhead and it kind of pulls back and then drops down and continues. Again, Cliff Bolt sort of opening the scene with nice movement, camera movement.
Yep.
Zolan, the guy with the phones or the mouse traps on his coat. I love
mouse
this
trap
guy.
Coat alien.
Yeah. I felt like he needed a pencil mustache, that guy.
Oh, like, that would have been great.
It would have been great. Just a little pencil mustache would have been perfect for
it. It reminded me of a Twilight Zone alien.
Yeah.
With the weird lip. It was
And all the stuff and the fancy hairdo. He must spend a lot of time in the salon.
There was hair around there, but the top part looked like his brain was showing or something. That part was really funky looking. Or it looked like bread, maybe.
It did. It looked like a
brain
big challah bread.
Or bread.
Yeah. Like challah bread. Yeah.
With a nice
fancy
hairdo
braid.
Yeah.
Quark passes through the scene. I think this is the only scene we see Quark in. He literally passes through and says, I hate it when
it might be,
you know, people are on a winning streak that doesn't stop or something.
He goes, there's nothing quite so
Dabo!
Depressing as a winning streak that won't stop streaking. Yes. And I know that look on Quark's face because when, you know, pit bosses are at a craps table that's giving out money, they are doing the same thing. They're like, please end this streak
now.
Stop
this streak. Winning runs can go on, and so can losing runs.
Well, the thing is, when it's on a losing run, you just don't bet then. You notice it's happening, so you say, stop, and then go. You leave.
Some people can't stop, though.
Well, here's my tip to everyone out there. If you're playing blackjack, if you lose three hands in a row, three in a row, gotta go. That's it. Very simple. Save your bankroll for another time.
Three in a row, gotta go. And that doesn't mean to the bathroom.
No, it means leave the casino. Leave
and
that
go to another casino.
No, go home, get lunch, right?
Go get lunch.
Dabo!
Watch
Dabo!
All right, so Quark walks through. He's very depressed. He can't stand that this winning streak is going on. And Bashir approaches and wants to know from Zolan about the boy. And Zolan at first is like, I don't want to talk about it. I want to stay out of this. But he finally reveals that there's abuse in this house, that the family beats the boy, Silly, and they take out their revenge for what the Cardassians had done on this poor, innocent child. And it's funny because I made a note here at the end of the scene. I was like, wait, was this whole thing set up by Dukat?
It had to
Was Zolan working? Did Zolan and Dukat? How did I know that? And then I forgot it as I got in the episode. Yeah. But at that moment, I was like, this feels like a setup or something.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Dukat does not know that Rugal has come onto the station until the biting happens. And in that introductory scene,
Well, he says he doesn't know, but does he know?
Well, it already
would
happened.
He? I mean, if he's with his father, Proka, and we see mousetrap coat alien guy walk on in the very beginning, this is before the bite even happens, right? So you're saying that he already knew that this Cardassian kid was on the transport, and he sent Zolan on the same transport when they got off at the same time. It's a little questionable.
Yes, I think you're right. Because he also says in that he's visited them several times. So what if he is being paid by
Dukat
to keep an eye on the situation
and manipulate
because of
it.
How important that kid is?
We
don't know as a viewer right now how important he is.
That makes sense. So Zolan has always kept tabs on Little Rugal.
I think so.
And he knew they were traveling to DS9 or Terek Nor in Cardassian. Yeah. So that's why. Okay, that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
And I think I made that note because I was like, if he's telling the truth, I guess I didn't buy his story when I saw the scene. Yeah. If he's telling the truth, why did the kid go hug the Bajoran father? Why would he hug?
Exactly.
That's why it didn't ring true for us.
Right.
Yes.
That should have been our first tell that he wasn't telling the truth, because there was nothing about the behavior of the father and the son and the adopted father or whatever.
Yeah, no.
But I do want to commend the casting director, because the casting of Proka, he does look like somebody who possibly could be, you know, you're not sure, you know, if they cast somebody that looked like Mr. Rogers.
He could be a bad guy or a good guy. You don't know.
He could go either way. Whereas if they cast someone who looks so, you know, benign, like Mr. Rogers, you never would have believed that he would have gone to the abuse part, you know.
But also we have to know how angry he is with the Cardassians that he's racist.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah, yep.
So if he didn't have that anger, that would make play completely different too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yep. Agreed.
I also like that you bring up he wasn't Mr. Rogers, which made me think, why didn't we ever have Mr. Rogers as a guest star on Star Trek? Mr. Rogers would have been great as
he
an alien.
He would have wanted to be on Next Gen. He would have wanted to be with LeVar.
Yes. Mr. Rogers should have been a guest star.
And if LeVar couldn't get him,
nobody could.
Did they ever show Will Wheaton's biological father? It could have been Mr. Rogers. Would have been amazing. That casting would have. Look at the guy that plays Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
That face married to Gates McFadden could have produced Will Wheaton very easily in my brain.
The guy plays Mr. Fred Rogers.
It's Fred Rogers.
Is this his name, Fred?
Okay. His real name is Mr. Rogers.
Fred Rogers.
It's not an axe, Garrett. That was the real guy.
Guys, did you never see it?
Of course I saw it, but I never assumed. I always assume whoever's on TV
is like
playing
a character
a
name.
Yeah. So, all right. So no. Fred Rogers and Gates McFadden. Can you believe their kid looks like Will Wheaton? Yes, I can.
I
can too.
I don't care who Fred Rogers plays. I just wish he had been on Star Trek at some point. That would be amazing.
Yeah, that would have been cool.
Been nice.
That would have. We're at the infirmary now. So we go to the infirmary. Bashir's working on Garrick's hand, you know, from the bite wound, because Cardassians have, you know, germs, and you got to make sure that with a Cardassian bite, Terry, it's a scientific fact. You got to get your shots.
Terry, welcome to the mind of Robbie.
I'm just thinking to coin a phrase by Roz Chow in this episode.
Yeah.
That was a very ugly thing you just said.
No, it doesn't make them bad people. It's just that their germs might make. Oh, no, another Cardassian, because Garrick's Cardassian, too. He'd be fine with it. He doesn't need a shot, then.
He doesn't.
No, he doesn't need the Cardassian shot.
It's the same germs.
Seriously, it's same thing. It's just as ugly.
It's true.
If you bit me, I'd want to get shots, too.
I would, too. Human bites are nasty. Exactly. Maybe Cardassian bites are poisonous. You don't know.
This kid isn't from the wild. He lives in a home.
I didn't say he's from the wild. I'm saying he's an alien species that might have a poisonous bite. I don't know. Has anyone ever asked that question about Cardassians?
No one said, oh, my God, we're poisonous. Be careful.
Okay, so Bashir's working on it. He thanks Garrick for helping him to uncover these poor orphans. And then Bashir mentions this may help Gul Dukat and Sisko, who are trying to resolve this war orphan problem.
Yeah.
And suddenly Garrick is very surprised, and he tells Bashir that attention to detail is an important Cardassian trait. They just don't forget things like orphans on the planet. And he does mention in the scene that Gul Dukat was once in charge of this withdrawal.
Every time you guys say Garrick, I hear my name. Every single time I hear Garrett. Yeah. It's like, it's
messing with my head. You're Gawa, and Garrick is Garrick.
Is Garrick. Thank you.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Yeah, but Garrick is very surprised about this combo of like, Gul Dukat cares, but why didn't he care on the, you know, the evacuation? It seems very suspicious. Yeah. So
it's Gul red Dukat flag time.
Yep. Yes, exactly. Well put. We're in ops. Dukat is on the screen. He's thanking Sisko for his help. He says, get us a DNA sample of Rugal and we will find his family because we care. I, Gul Dukat, care. Bashir interrupts and asks Dukat why he chose to leave all these children. And he interrupts Sisko. He just jumps right in.
Not smart.
Doesn't, yeah. Oh. Interrupts. Dukat says it was a civilian order. And Bashir says, I think Dukat says, where are you getting your information about Cardassians or something?
Yeah.
And he says, Garrick told him, not Gawa, Garrick.
Garrick, thank you.
And Dukat says, remind Garrick that the civilians ordered this surrender and this withdrawal. And Dukat says he's regretted it ever since. I was on board with Garrick here. Because I don't know where Garrick's going. So I was like, Garrick seems to care.
Yeah.
He really did seem to care to me.
Wait a minute. Do you mean Gul Dukat seemed to care?
Oh, yeah. That's what I meant. Gul Dukat. I like Gul Dukat at this point. I don't by the end of this episode, but I did.
Okay. You were a team Gul Dukat for this beginning part.
Yeah. And this is like the third time we're seeing Gul Dukat where he's being empathetic?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I was starting to think, I don't know what's going on here. And now I'm getting kind of confused.
Yeah. Because you know Gul Dukat and you know that maybe this was not in character for him to be so
right.
empathetic.
Right. Dax didn't at the time. I mean, not in this episode, Terry Farrell watching it, yes, because
you know where he's going.
I already lived it.
Yeah.
But in reliving it, I don't remember him seeming so
nice. And
Yeah.
Well, when Gul Dukat hangs up, Sisko is pissed at Bashir. And he basically says, never do that again. This is the one moment where I think Avery was, his strength was right up front. He was tough on Bashir here.
He knows he's more powerful than Bashir. Yeah. So it wasn't like he used more force than he needed to.
No.
I was surprised the lack of reaction on Bashir's face. I thought Bashir should have been a little bit more apologetic, at least in some way. Like, yeah, I mean, it's his commanding officer. He knows that he's not above the captain or commander, whatever. Sisko's
yeah, you're right, because he keeps talking about it. He's like,
I still think he was a little disrespectful. Yeah.
He apologized, though. He did say, I'm sorry, Commander. It just seemed to not be opportune.
But he was pushing it. I agree with you, Terry. He was pushing it.
Yeah, it wasn't respectful in the way that it should have been.
Yeah. But then Sisko said, don't apologize, right? He says, it's been the high point of his day. And he says, don't do it again at the very end.
Well, he was very sarcastic. He's like, oh, don't apologize. It's been the high point. He was very sort of...
Oh, so that was sarcastic. For you.
Sarcastic.
Yes.
That was sarcastic. Very sarcastic.
Yes. Yeah.
Got it.
For those of us who have been parents, yes. That's, I guess, what I mean. Once he said that, don't do it again, I'm surprised that Bashir didn't, I know he didn't have a line, but I was surprised that he seemed to just be very blasé about it. I was surprised he didn't have more of a, I think if that happened to me, I don't think I'd fall apart, but I would have this a little feeling in my gut like, shit, I just got away with something. I'm going to watch it next time. Mm-hmm. But there was just, I don't know, it was odd.
Bashir was obsessed with this mystery of Garrick and why Garrick, the information Garrick was giving him, I think. He was Detective Bashir.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was on a case.
Well, he was young. He was very young in this. I mean, it's a young person's reaction not to be respectful or a little more shaken by the fact that you just got to pass.
Mm-hmm. But Sisko in the end does say, well, I'll have to talk to Garrick about this myself. and have them in my office at 2100 hours. So Cisco's going to talk to Garrick about this. We cut, I think, next to O'Brien's quarters where we see Rugal reading. And Miles comes in. Rugal's very quiet, sitting by himself, reading a pad. Helps set the dinner table with Keiko. And he's quietly sort of saying, you know, great idea to have Molly away for the night. Because basically Rugal is not safe. It's not safe to have Molly here. And Keiko's like, what are you talking about? They played all day. She's asleep. She's worn out. She's in fell asleep in the other room. And Keiko says something like, he was really gentle with her all day or something. Mm-hmm. And this is where O'Brien says, gentle was bred out of Cardassians a long time ago. Mm-hmm. And that's where Keiko gets very offended, pissed off at this sort of generalization that all Cardassians have been bred a certain way.
Yeah.
Why are they fostering him? It just seems to me, if someone was fostering this child, she's the teacher, but this should be somebody who is with a counselor and not a family with a little girl.
Yeah. Because they were ordered to. Cisco ordered them.
Yeah, but why pick them? I agree with you.
Right. As a parent, just looking at the whole situation, I'm concerned for Rugal. I'm really concerned for him being raised in a family where his parents, his adoptive parents, are racist against his race, but they love him even though he's that race. It's an incredibly confusing message.
Yeah.
So we're part of Starfleet. You put him with a family that's vulnerable as well because they have a little girl, like little. She's like three or four. It seems to me the foster, if you're going to be in sort of a foster situation, it shouldn't be with a child that's so small. She's a toddler. That upsets me as a parent watching that.
Yeah. Okay. I agree with you. But
I mean, I'm not going to write in.
But it's a little late. They filmed it, Terry. It's already late. Shot.
But it's just sort of like this poor child needs therapy.
Not the smartest choice to put him with a family that has a young child, but it is the right choice story-wise to get Miles on this track of redemption where Miles is going to learn
a lesson.
He's going to learn a lesson because he does learn a big lesson. It would make more sense to me.
And Keiko's the closest thing we have to a counselor, I guess, on our show.
Sort of. I mean, Dax could have been a good choice, too, to put him with Dax. But then you wouldn't have gotten to Miles.
I don't want to be a foster parent on the show, so I was good with that choice. I'm just speaking as sort of like this kid has a lot going on.
Yeah.
And when she serves that meal, the Cardassian meal, it seems a little tone deaf.
Yeah.
If you know his situation.
Yeah.
And she doesn't present it in a way like you probably have never tried this, but this is from your home world.
Hey, this is a great idea. It's a little tone deaf.
Okay.
At the end of the scene, so she makes this food. And Miles tries it. He doesn't like it. Rugal tries the Cardassian food. He didn't even try it. That's right. And then at the end, they both slide their bowls. Rugal and Miles both go, nope, I'm not about Cardassians.
And their bowls clink together. And that's when Miles should have said cheers to you like that.
Ding. Yes.
It's like a.
Yes.
Okay. I would have just a teensy bit of a smile on Rugal that he wasn't alone because he had Miles.
Exactly. Yeah. That would have been the right direction, Terry, because then there would have been this camaraderie coming together.
But I don't believe Keiko would have been that deaf, tone deaf to the whole situation at all.
How old is Rugal in your estimation?
The character or the actor?
The character. Is he 12? Because he was left at 4 to 8. It was 8 years later. Which doesn't seem like he looks older than 12.
He seemed like a
Cardassians
very mature 12-year-old.
Are very advanced for their age. They go into puberty at like 6 years old.
Fine.
Yeah.
What? I would guess 16 or 17.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
But then I was confused with the timeline. So I was trying to get help from both of you in terms of what you felt his age
How do we both miss that? No, he does not seem like a 12-year-old at all.
No, sir.
And we both raised 12-year-olds, so.
Yes, no.
Yeah.
And as mature as they were.
Right.
I felt like the actor was probably 25 years old, and I think the character was probably supposed to be 15 or 16 or something.
Yeah. But if you know, the final scene when Bashir's basically the court prosecutor and he says, and who was the person in charge of Tarek Noor 8 years ago when they sent that officer to drop off Rugal 8 years ago? So he was 4 plus 8 is 12, which doesn't make sense.
I love that you keep saying that as if this is something that's difficult for Robbie and I to process.
Oh, no, not at all. I'm eight just asking plus for four. Advice.
No, sorry. Really, you guys.
No,
eight
but
plus four is
Cardassians,
12.
I'm telling you, Cardassians hit puberty very early.
At six.
At six.
Their
years
voice
old.
Already changes at six.
Yes.
No, they don't even
yes.
sound like kids at that
yes.
point. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you for answering that.
They say our children at 12.
All right. So they've had dinner. The stew. Yes. Miles and Rugal hate the stew. That's something they've got in common.
The green
there.
Jello.
Yes.
No. Yeah. No.
We go back to Miles's quarters a little later. Miles is working when Rugal comes in to the room. Awkward silence at the top of the scene. Miles makes a move, starts talking to him, makes a move, and goes and sits by Rugal to try to get to know him. And Rugal reveals that he does love Bajor and he's ashamed of being a Cardassian. He tells Miles. Mm. And then Miles says, you know, you can't judge an entire race based on just a few people. He's met some Cardassians that he really likes and some that he doesn't like. And Rugal says, well, the Cardassians murdered 10 million Bajorans. He learned it in school on Bajor. Mm. So you can see Miles sort of trying to change his own preconceptions. And he's working with Rugal to try to, you know,
well, did you notice
here?
He couldn't think of it. Wasn't
yeah.
It's not like he has a friend that's.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly.
When I saw him say that, I thought, and he cannot think of a single Cardassian
single
that he actually likes.
That he really
he
likes.
Say it anyway, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he says, and I know he goes. There are some Cardassians that I like you, is what he says. Is what
yes.
right? So that's his only person that he likes is Rugal, basically.
Who he doesn't really know.
No.
Who he doesn't know yet. But he likes him because he hit puberty so young. And
he's a kid.
Impressed by that.
Yeah.
I did like one thing that Cliff Bull did in this scene. When O'Brien chooses very intentionally to get up from his work and go over and engage Rugal, that the camera move starts on one side, the screen direction. And as Miles comes over, it switches to the other side. So you feel, for people listening, like screen direction is very subtle, but important in sort of capturing what side of the line you're on, what direction the characters are talking to each other. And so when you switch screen direction, often that can be used to kind of say, hey, there's a new, we're turning a corner in this scene. We're going in a new direction, literally. And Cliff did that when Miles makes that choice to go from one attitude about Cardassians to another. And it was very subtle,
nice.
But I thought it was great.
Mm-hmm. Like a detail. Symbolic way of using the camera.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that up. That's wonderful.
Good job, Cliff Bull.
Good job, Cliff Bull. And DPs don't usually like it because now they're lighting from two different sides of the room. And so you don't make that choice to switch screen directions unless it's important. And it seemed important in the scene. So
Well, and they didn't have beauty lighting, so that was probably helpful.
Yes, it allowed them. Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Create the deck of your dreams now at Menards. Spend less time maintaining your deck and more time enjoying it with UltraDeck low-maintenance composite decking from Menards. It's easy to install and built to last. Plus, get free estimates fast with our deck design program in-store and on Menards.com. Save big on UltraDeck. And check out more great deals happening now at Menards. Save big money at
Menards. We go to Bashir's quarters next. Bashir is having a very restless night in his PJs. Jumping around in the bed.
Creepy.
Creepy Garrick.
Garrick arrives. We need to hurry. We need to get going.
Garrick
says.
Is just there. Like yeah. He's been watching him sleep for a while.
Yes.
But Terry.
And he's got a creepy smile
so
on his
upsetting
face
to me. How did he get in his quarters?
Yeah. Terry, this
and
same
why
thing.
Why isn't Bashir freaked out?
Yes, he's not freaked out.
What the heck are you doing in my room? And then I thought, is this a dream?
I thought it was a dream too.
For a
yeah, because okay, Garrick
I'm
was
so scared about what you want to say.
No, I just want to say that this same thing happened on Voyager. It was my character in my quarters, and then I opened my eyes, and Robbie's character is right there in my bedroom, and it's not a dream. And he's like, "Let's go, we gotta go." So the same thing happened on
same
Voyager.
Scene.
Yeah, same scene exactly.
So you two were a little creepy too. No,
well. Yeah. No, yeah, but he's my best buddy. He's my
but
best
our characters
buddy,
so knew each other really well.
This
is it didn't come yeah. off creepy, is what
okay.
I'm saying, when Robbie did it. So when Tom Paris did it, excuse me.
Oh, okay, because you guys were best friends.
Yes, we're best friends. Like he would have the key to my
okay.
place.
But I
probably.
Never got any like sexual sparks from Garrick and
Bashir.
And Bashir
in this episode.
No. But you're right. But, it's totally creepy with Garrick in there.
But it was, yeah. And he has that look on his eyes.
He's got
it's like,
smile
that look like, yeah.
Yeah. That was creepy. Not like, dude, come on.
Right. And didn't we learn that he played that in the very first episode? When you see Garrick meet Bashir
yes.
for the first time, he played, I am interested. Andrew Robinson played, yeah. I'm attracted to Bashir. In that way, right? We talked
yeah.
about that. So,
which yeah. I didn't really pay attention to. So now it stands out to me. And
yeah.
now
yeah.
I feel creepy about him
yeah.
in my friend Bashir's
yeah.
bedroom.
And what if Bashir sleeps in the nude? You
he
don't
doesn't.
Know. He doesn't. But what if he
because
did?
The film was that running.
Would... That's true. But what if he did? Garrick just can't come in somebody's bedroom without being invited.
I just
it
what?
Needs to be.
How do you not lock your door?
Yeah. All
right. In Starfleet, doesn't it automatically lock? I don't know.
It should. Well, we go to Sisko's quarters next. And now Sisko is hauled out of bed. Bashir rings the doorbell. He doesn't just burst in like Garrick.
Yeah.
He does ring the doorbell, but yeah. He wakes him up. Sisko's in a robe.
Hey, Sisko looks like Hugh Hefner. Look at that. Look at that gorgeous.
Yeah,
he looked
he
pretty.
Awesome,
yeah. He looked pretty slick.
Oh,
very
yeah.
stylish.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Bashir says he's got to use a runabout. I love when Sisko goes, will one runabout be enough?
There's so much sarcasm in
so
this
much
episode
sarcasm.
From Sisko. Yeah.
Yes, I laughed out loud.
Sarcastic Sisko.
Needs a runabout in the middle of the night to go down to Bajor, and then Gul Dukat calls. Sisko just cannot get his sleep tonight.
No.
And Gul Dukat tells Sisko he found the family. He's that Rugal is the son of Khotan Podar, a politician, the ex-exarch for the Cardassian settlement there on Bajor. And they thought that Rugal had died in some kind of terrorist attack, says Gul Dukat.
Mm-hmm.
He's lying. Gul Dukat says Podar. Khotan Podar is on his way to DS9 to see the boy. And Bashir thinks this is why Garrick wanted to go to Bajor. The next shot is a planet shot of Bajor. And that, what were you going to say, Terry? The same shot.
Weird waterfall. Like
yeah, it's like a 3D waterfall. It's very weird.
How come we never go there?
We never see that weird waterfall.
Right, we should. If it's
you don't
want to
see, you don't
want
to see that waterfall up close. It's weird. It's even weirder in person.
It's not even water. It's Cardassian poisonous saliva. That's kind of being.
Oh, okay. Back to poisonous Cardassian.
I know.
Okay,
all right,
so
let's go.
We cut inside the Orphan Resettlement Center. I will say this is the only shot Cliff Bowl that I didn't like. It's just this wide shot and Bashir and Garrick just walk in to this lady. And I was like, where are we? And why isn't anyone escorting them? And like, that was the one shot where I was like,
it was like a cave with light coming into it. And with a computer. Yeah, where are we?
Computer sitting in the middle of the room or something.
I want to play devil's advocate for Cliff Bowl and just say that it's possible. It's at the end of a shoot day. They were running short on time. And they just said, look, just get this done. We can't do an elaborate setup.
That's what it felt like a little bit. This felt like a let's rushed. Get it done quick.
Yeah.
But they walk in. Bashir asks the lady who's there if they can find any info on the boy's adoption, on Rugal's adoption. And she doesn't recognize either of their names, not the dad, not the kid. She doesn't think they're going to find anything because the computers don't work. And Garrick reveals suddenly to Bashir's surprise that he knows a little about isolinear data subprocessors, which surprised me too.
Nothing says, might be a spy.
Yeah.
Then something like that. Let me just pull that out of my ass.
Yeah.
But guys, if this thing has been inoperative for years, wouldn't you toss the whole thing? Why would it still be there?
Why do they still have it there?
I don't get it. Okay.
You know why? I have a mini split that doesn't work and it's I want to take it out.
But
because
it's still
I have
there.
To hire someone to take it out and patch the hole.
All right, that's fine.
Okay.
I'll go with that.
Back to our story.
This is the resettlement center. This is the Tozot resettlement center where they've come, and Garrick is going to fiddle around with the data subprocessors. We have a little time cut. We cut in, we see the computer comes to life, and he's got a Cardassian monocle on, which I thought was very cool.
Yeah.
You know that little, it looked like some
kind of... what a monocle is.
Yeah, but it was a weird shape, and it looked like it had like computer lines on it or something. So I thought that was pretty
fancy
cool.
Monocle.
It's
fancy,
really. Yes. If we would have shot a movie version, we would have seen inside of that, like
all the computer.
That would have been cool.
Yeah, but he does get the computer working, but he can't find Rugal's name or any information. But he downloads into his little pad, his Cardassian pad, downloads tens of thousands of files onto that little hard drive. And then they turn to leave and they see these Cardassian orphans, these refugee orphans.
Excuse me, sir.
This is our Oliver
this is our
moment.
Oliver twist moment.
With dear Asha, played by young Miss Seismer. Mm-hmm.
Can I have some more?
Some more, please.
They ask if they're going to get taken, though. Are they here to rescue them? And Garrick says no. He's afraid not. And it does seem sincere. You know,
it's sad.
Oh, no.
Actually.
He was very sweet. I'm sorry, my child. I think he uses the word child.
Yeah, that's what he said. Yeah.
He's just very sweet.
Just sad.
Yes. We go to a space shot of the runabout. We cut inside. Garrick's analyzing this data. When Bashir tells the computer, stop engines. We need to talk, Garrick. And Bashir demands that Garrick tell him what the heck is going on. And Garrick is very sly. I love the way Garrick talks. It's always in these riddles. It's always in these puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
But he talks very slyly to Bashir to pay attention to the coincidences that are happening. And, you know, the Padar's son happens to be this boy that just happened to come on the ship. It's a lot of coincidences. And he does not trust coincidences, which makes sense to me. So.
Mm-hmm. And the biggest information that we receive is that Padar and Gul Dukat, they are enemies when it comes to politics. Yeah. They don't see the same way. They're not on the same page.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I don't know who to trust. But I trust Garrick, sort of. Sort of.
Okay.
I reserve the right not to trust anyone.
Yes. And you know more than all of us. So.
You do.
We go into O'Brien's quarters next. Padar arrives. Miles talks with him. Padar explains how important family is to Cardassians. He seems very sincere here.
Yeah.
He's very passionate. He feels very guilty that he abandoned his son. And then Keiko arrives with Rugal.
I really believed right away that he really thought his son was dead. So this is
This is huge.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
This is huge. But Rugal arrives, sees his dad. Padar tries to explain and connect with his kid there with Rugal, but Rugal just calls him a butcher and says he's never going back to Cardassia. Just like that. He said it just like that. I'm never going back. You could never.
Oh, you're doing the Ocotarians would never do that right
yes,
now.
Yes, I was. Okay. But Rugal is not going back with his father. So very sad reunion with Padar and Rugal there.
Yeah.
But not surprising.
But not
because
surprising.
He hasn't seen his father for 8 years.
He doesn't even remember his face.
No. And he's been being brainwashed
by his Bajoran pops.
That Cardassians are all evil.
Yep. Yep. We go in the commander's office now. The fathers are arguing, basically, at the start of the scene. And Sisko says, you know what? You need an arbitrator. And they agree. They do need an arbitrator. And they want Sisko to arbitrate.
Yeah.
And Sisko is about to work it out when Odo calls. And I just have to say, Odo's not in the episode.
No.
We never see him.
Actually, I remember talking to Rick Berman about this once.
They
did this purposefully. Wrote us in when we weren't in episodes and had us do a voiceover so that we would get our residuals.
Oh,
it was very generous that they did that. They didn't have to, but they did. Yeah.
Bel Dukat has arrived on the station. What?
Yeah.
Which
is huge red flags.
He's a little too Johnny on the spot in this entire episode.
Why is he there? Yeah.
Coincidences, as Garrick says. Coincidence.
Coinky dink.
We have a station log next. The arrival, Sisko says, the arrival of Gul Dukat only powers my suspicion that we are being manipulated in some unseen manner. Dr. Bashir and Garrick continue to search for anything relevant in the adoption files. So far, they found nothing, and the decision on custody for Rugal cannot wait much longer. How come it can't wait much longer? I don't know.
Drama.
Oh, the drama.
Dramatic license.
During this station log, there is a short shot of Bashir and Garrick working on files, which is an unusual cutaway for Star Trek. You know, those kind of like montage-y things. I don't know if that was Cliff Bowl pitching it or not, but it was nice to see.
I like him.
Yeah, I do too.
I think it's a fun way to show progress quickly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They decide to do this mediation in the schoolroom, I guess. They're in the schoolroom. Sisko's very surprised that Gul Dukat came all the way to DS9 just for a custody hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Suspicious. He does let them know that he's aware that they were political enemies, that Dukat and Padar were political enemies. And Dukat says he's only concerned about the children's welfare. I started getting suspicious of Dukat. Even though I was Team Dukat for a while early on, I'm now did not trust him.
You know
him.
What? We still love you, and we're not judging your ignorance.
Okay, good. Thank you.
And also, Robbie, I also feel subconsciously because you used to own Ducati bicycles.
I did.
Motorcycles. Yes. That maybe Team Dukat is why you were.
Yes, yeah. That could Ducati, be why Ducat. I like Dukat because of Ducati motorcycles. Yes. True. Mm-hmm. Nice.
You will soon know him
not
better.
Like Ducati. Yes.
Don't spoil it. Don't spoil anything, Terry. We know that we're going to see some stuff hit the fan.
Hair-raising shit, man.
Okay, go ahead.
Right, we go to the infirmary. Garrick suddenly has a light bulb moment. He realizes he was wrong, that Dukat would have been smart enough to purge this file of Rugal. If he was manipulating all this, but he has already found the name of the person that wrote the original file, so maybe they will remember. Her name is Jomat Luson. Sounds like a French name.
Sounds like a Filipino name to me.
Oh yeah, does.
But I want to say a thing. I do like when Garrick said how perfectly foolish of me the way the writers wrote that for Garrick. Just that line itself was just wonderful when he got the aha moment. He says this.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And Andy's talented.
He's super talented, and they have a good, very specific voice for that character. And
we have to ask him to be on the show, too.
Oh, he's going to be on the show. I've already talked
sure.
to him.
Oh, you have? Yay, I love him. Oh, please let it be one where I'm there, too.
We'll get both of you on. That'd be awesome.
Oh, my gosh.
To get you and Armin
him.
And Andrew Robinson would be amazing.
Terry, he really is the best, isn't he? I mean, as a person, he's amazing. He's just one of those guys. When you see him, you just smile from ear to ear. There's Andrew Robinson.
I remember when he was younger, I had one of those movie crushes on. He was so cute.
Yeah, super handsome.
Super handsome.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, all right, yeah.
Oh, yeah. All right. We go to the schoolroom, back to our arbitration, our custody hearing. Sisko's questioning Rugal about his first memories, and Rugal remembers his father, the Bajoran father, teaching him to swim. Yeah, he's got this memory of. So it's just a short little scene, but it was a sweet detail that you know, it's a very familiar kind of family thing of learning to swim or learning to ride a bike with your parent or things like that.
It's an important part of the story because he was adopted, having that. It also tells us the bonding that has happened in his formative years with his adoptive parents. So like this in real life is a deep struggle for people, this kind of thing.
Yeah. In this scene, you do see the affection that the Bajoran father Proka has for Rugal and vice versa. Rugal definitely loves his Bajoran father. You see that in that whole swimming thing.
Most importantly. Yeah.
Yeah. We go back to the infirmary, and Bashir is on a video call with this Bajoran person that wrote the records, Jomat. Garrick is hiding out of view so that he won't be seen. And she does remember Rugal because he was the only one that was turned into Bajorans by a Cardassian. The rest were just found orphans, but this one was very different because he was turned in by a female military officer from the command post Terek Nor. And when Garrick hears that, there's a big smile. That makes sense to Garrick. We don't know exactly why yet, but this is starting to come together. We go to the schoolroom next, and they're discussing Rugal's situation when Bashir and Garrick come in, now that they've talked to this lady that took the record. And Bashir asks if he can ask some questions, and it didn't go well the first time when he interrupted Sisko, but Sisko seems to cautiously agree to let Bashir ask some questions. And basically this is the courtroom scene of the episode where Bashir is acting like a prosecutor and lays out the whole plan that Dukat was involved in kidnapping Rugal expressly to shame his rival, his political rival, one day in the future. And, it's a long scene. It's a courtroom scene, but Dukat ultimately can't defend any of it. And he leaves very angry at Garrick at the end.
Yeah. But the important point is that literally, if this comes to light, he will lose his political career. It ends. Yeah. Yeah. It ends immediately. It's finished.
Yep. Mm-hmm. There was some nice camera movement in these scenes with the camera going around behind some of the characters and some movement in there that I thought Cliff did a good job. Again, the only shot in this whole episode that I thought Cliff, you know, short change was maybe that scene when they arrived in Bajor. Otherwise, every scene Cliff did such a great job.
Mm-hmm. And wasn't it kind of odd that just Dukat gets up and walks out and what would they stop him for? I mean, but it did feel kind of unsatisfying for me.
That like there was no consequences for this craziness that he's caused, right? It's like nothing. Mm-hmm.
Nothing.
Nope.
Well, especially that he literally leaves the room.
Yeah.
Because in the next scene, we realize that Hadar is going to leave. He's going to take his son back to Cardassia.
And there was a stalemate between them two.
Yeah, and that they're going to keep it quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he won't lose his political career, and Dukat won't get in trouble either. They sort of, they just cancel each other out.
Yeah.
And what's weird to me, though, is that leader didn't do anything wrong. Rugal's father didn't do anything wrong. It was all done on him by Dukat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it feels like Dukat got off. As you said, it feels a little unsatisfying because there's no consequence for Dukat here.
Yeah.
He's clearly busted in a conspiracy plan and he doesn't pay any price for it. Yeah. Mm-mm.
It's a horrible conspiracy plan. He made Padar think his son was dead. Like this that's the worst conspiracy I can think of. It's horrible.
Yeah. Miles comes in with Rugal in this scene where they're in the promenade where they're leaving. Miles brings Rugal in and he does leave with Padar, but he's clearly still very wary. And Miles says to him, you know, you're welcome to come back here anytime. So we see this growth in Miles that that O'Brien has softened a bit in his generalizations about Cardassians and things, which I thought that was a really nice story.
Yeah, and to be a little more specific, Miles says anytime you want to see your old adoptive parents, meaning Broca and Broca's wife, I'll set it up. I will broker that. So that's what it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very sweet.
But it's a far cry from him
all Cardassians
judging the kid and you can't be around playing with Molly.
Yep.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, huge. So yeah, he's definitely seen the light in a way, but it's so sad. I mean, all I can think about is the kid, Rugal. He's the loser, though, and he's still the loser because he doesn't even want to go back to Cardassia. He doesn't even know Padar as his father. It's just all around. This made me very sad watching this episode.
Yeah. Refugees and orphans. It's a sad reality, you know. It really is. Our very last scene is in the Replimat, back where we started this episode.
Yeah.
Bashir asks Garrett, what is the truth about him and Dukat? Like, he wants, Bashir's like, tell me, you know, what is going on with you guys? And Garrick again speaks in this kind of these riddles.
And I love this writing, though. I do.
Yeah.
Very lyrical.
Yes. Very, yeah, very kind of almost poetical. Yeah. Garrick basically says he doesn't believe in the truth because there is no such thing. And he talks about, you know, he prefers the straight line and simplicity of just cutting cloth. It's very, yes, it's very poetic.
A little bit of bullshit.
A little bit of avoidance.
I don't believe you'd really rather be cutting cloth, or he wouldn't have been on the planet fixing the computer.
Yes, yes. But he does say to Bashir, just look around. You can find the truth. It's all around you, like scattered breadcrumbs all around. And that is the end of it. So we kind of bookend Bashir Garrick scenes in this episode. And I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
My lesson is the truth is in the details that we often overlook. That was my lesson. Sometimes we can make generalizations like Miles. People can make assumptions off of a first glance at something, judgments and things like that. But the truth is really in the details, like Garrick says, the breadcrumbs that are all around us. We just have to look.
I didn't know quite how to put it together. But yeah. For me... the judgment, the racism in this really bothered me. But I thought it was the biggest lesson about taking people one person at a time, but I didn't know how to articulate that.
Yeah. Don't judge people on generalizations, judge them for who they truly are as an individual.
Who they show you that they are. Right.
Yeah, we're on the same page, Terry. Definitely. I my lesson is don't judge a book by its cover, number one, and don't generalize when it comes to a race or a species.
Yes.
You cannot say your experience with one person or one alien, it means that the rest of that race or species is exactly like that. You can't do that. That's generalizing. So be very careful of generalizing.
Yes. Winner of the Patreon poll for the theme moral of the episode is submitted by Alexander Ray. There are more victims in war than just those hurt on the battlefield. Wow.
Very true.
Yeah. And look at this poor abandoned, or not, he wasn't abandoned intentionally. Kidnapped. But anyway, the orphans, they're going to live this trauma. And what did they do?
Yeah.
Nothing.
Innocent victims. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep. All right, everyone. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Delta Flyers as we journey through the wormhole. Join us next time when we'll be reviewing, recapping, and discussing the episode Melora. And of course, for all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned.